David Murata joins us, president of Murata Wealth Management, and online at muradaonmoney.com. A super fascinating topic today because it's something probably most of you have never really considered. Like, how long should I plan on living? And most people just like, well, I die when I die, and that's the way it goes. I really shouldn't or don't know how to give any thought to it. David Murata, welcome to The Shilling Show. Happy New Year. Great to have you with us.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
All right, so let's start with that part, and there's a lot of components to this. So I guess I want to start out with this question, is kind of measuring the success of a financial plan, because you spend a lot of time talking about that in the story that you published online at muradaonmoney.com, and this is really going to planning. So how would we even begin there, and then we'll talk about the actual calculation part of this.
Well, one thing to know is that if you do any financial planning, you're probably going to add 3 to 5 years to your life.
That's fascinating to me. Make the connection for us.
Yes, it has nothing to do with financial planning. Financial planning is not some magic bullet that suddenly makes you live 3 to 5 years longer. But because you have financial planning, that puts you in a demographic of a whole host of other considerations. Mm. So you have sufficient wealth to plan with. And it's really a demographic of that. You're probably not a smoker. You probably eat healthy. You probably live in a situation in which the gunfire that you hear are hunters, not violence in the street. Yeah. So all of that, it goes on, and it just means that you're going to live a lot longer than most people. I say a lot longer, 3 to 5 years longer, and that works out really well for people who do financial planning. But it also means that you need to count on a greater longevity in your family.
So where do you begin? Let's say someone's listening to this conversation and the question is, how long should I plan on living? Where do you begin in this calculation?
Yeah, so I look at the Social Security actuary tables, mm-hmm. And I did some calculations on those. They're really very straightforward. And I learned some interesting things. So, for example, there is a less than 2% chance of me dying this next year. I'm 62, mm-hmm. And less than 2% chance of dying is actually a lot smaller than I thought it was. You know, everyone hears, you know, post-50, you need to worry about all these things that you need to worry mm-hmm. about. But it turns out that we are very resiliently made, and we're going to live a long time. So contrary to television shows where you see somebody get punched and they're knocked out, or you see somebody get shot once and they're dead, mm-hmm. we're actually very resilient, and we're going to live a long time. People do die suddenly, and I understand that, but people also can live a long time. And I started working on this when I was first a financial planner, just how do you do a financial plan? How do you do retirement? And this is another piece in the puzzle, if you will, because I found that most clients who come to me think they're going to die young. They think they're going to die younger than they're going to die.
Where are they getting this from? What is that thought coming from?
So I you know, just sort of personally, once you reach 40, it's just downhill from there. You know, at 40, you know, you're jumping over fences. Mm-hmm. You're in your, you know, sort of, you know, you peaked at 30 and you still think you're 30.
Yeah.
And you just are amazed at how, you know, what good shape you're in. And then by the time you're 65, you just know that your body is beginning to slow down and fall apart. And you have all these sort of different concerns, if you will, mm-hmm. in your life, you know, things that are bothering you. And you know that any one of them could just bump you off immediately. Well, I'm just sort of here to say, yes, I understand that feeling. I'm in the middle of that feeling. I know how I'm not in as good shape as I was once was. I know how I don't have the same vigor if you do. Mm-hmm. But I also take great heart in seeing people who are in their 90s and they're still going strong and they're doing well. I have a father and a father-in-law who are both well in their 90s and they're both doing okay. So, you know, my father is 96. My mm-hmm. father-in-law is 93. They're both doing strong. My grandmother lived to 99 and a half. She almost made it to 100. I understand that that can happen and that you can live a good long life. My role models, you know, are my father and Warren Buffett, mm-hmm. and they're both, you know, still going strong in their 90s. Warren Buffett's still working because he's 3 years younger than my dad, so he hasn't retired yet.
Your dad was actually here in the studio with us some years back, and it was a real joy to talk to him, but you could just tell that he was so engaged and interested in his work and interested in life, and I think it's a wonderful role model, not just for you and the family, but for everybody.
Yeah, I think all of that's true. And one way to ensure that you're going to live a long life is to just keep working.
Mm-hmm.
I know that I share the Christian worldview with you, mm-hmm. and in the Christian worldview, work is not something you just do for money. Work is a calling. Work is a privilege, and you should continue to work as long as you can, because giving meaning to your life, it gives you a reason to get out of bed. It allows you to help other people. The work is just filled with so many positive benefits. You know, and there may come a time when I, you know, slow down a little bit, mm-hmm. or there may come a time when I retire. You know, I could see that, but you know, if I retired today, I would go out and find another productive job, because that's the fun out of it. And it's not that you can, it's not you retire as soon as you can, because as soon as you can retire, that just means you have financial independence.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, you can retire if you're very young. You can retire so long as your standard of living is well below the money that you have. You know, I could have retired many years ago, but I choose not to retire. Why? Because I enjoy the work that I do. I enjoy, you know, running the company that I run, and I enjoy all of that. There are times when work is work,
mm-hmm.
especially when it comes to government compliance. I rail against that on a daily basis.
Yeah.
And all the government compliance that they do really just makes work less fun. And it's amazing how much government compliance is. And when I say government's compliance, what I mean is I have to sit and I have to do data entry for government work for about 4 weeks out of the year. It's amazing how much work there is. But if you add up all of the compliance that it costs, I just have to make sure that everything is correct. And I have to do that for about 4 weeks out of the year. And it's not just one filing. It's multiple filings. You know, the government sent me a Dunning letter. Actually, their collection agency sent me a Dunning letter because I hadn't filed a form for my work for paying other people. It hadn't been filed correctly in 2019. You know, and the first notice I get from the government is a Dunning letter from their collection agency. And I have a payroll service, fortunately, to handle mm-hmm. that piece. And I talked to them, and they said, oh, yeah, we knew about that, but we thought that was all taken care of. And supposedly they're handling that. But, you know, I'm on the hook for that, and they're supposed to be handling it. And the filing fees and the penalties for having filed it, it wasn't even not filed correctly. It was filed late. The tax owed is zero. With penalties and interest, I owe $1,000.
And all this.
Right. And, yeah. I find that ridiculous. But... So there. If I ever retire, it's going to be because of government compliance. It won't be because of the joy of the work.
You know, I remember being a kid in the same era as you, and retirement was a thing. Like, that was what people aspired to. And then the whole image was kicking back in a rocking chair on the porch and doing nothing. And then you get bored and you die within 5 years or something. That never appealed to me. But I feel really bad when I talk to people who have retired after a long career, and I ask them, do they miss it? And more often than not, maybe much more often than not, like, I'm just done with that. It's almost like they weren't having fun. And, you know, as much as this job can weigh on me because I'm in the midst of a lot of things, or your job, as you just mentioned, we like it. We thrive on doing this. And it's never really so much felt like work as it has a calling. And I think, are you in that same boat?
Yes. Yeah. So you know, when I have a client who says, I'm just so done with it, I just want to be out of it.
Yeah.
I say, well, what would you want to do?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you do a little bit of life planning, because clearly they're in the wrong career. They're in the career for the money.
Yes.
And maybe the money's good, and maybe they're, you know, getting paid something for that, you know, and maybe they enjoy that. But what would they do if they didn't have that to do? What would they do? So and that's what they should be doing. And a little bit of life planning can sometimes overcome a bad job. So, you know, I do think you should have you should enjoy what you do going to work every day. And
yes.
And some of that may just be how we're cut. Because mm-hmm. I know that I'm cut happy. I would enjoy whatever I did. I would enjoy if I went to work, you know, at a McDonald's, I would mm-hmm. enjoy it. I would learn about the McDonald's. I would have fun at running at a McDonald's. And so it's just, if they don't enjoy anything, well, now you've got a problem, because, you know, now you just don't enjoy life, maybe. Because life is, you know, I asked my daughter once, well, it just seems like today I was just solving one problem after another. And she said, isn't that life? That's just solving one problem after another. That's what life is. You know, and if you don't enjoy life, well, you know, I understand that, you know, but that's sad. You should find something that you really enjoy doing.
977-1070 is a phone number. David Marotta is our guest. We're talking about planning. How long you should plan to live, and how can you make sure that you can live comfortably during that time? We'll come back on the other side. If you've got comments or questions, we'd love to hear from you at 977-1070. Or you could also send me an email, robs@wina.com. And The Shilling Show returns with David Morata in just a moment. Stay with us. All right, The Shilling Show continues. Our guest is David Morata. We're talking about retirement planning and how long should you plan to live, and then what does that mean once you make the decision? And I promise you we'd get to the callers, and I see calls coming in right now, so let us go to the phones, and we say hello to Bob. Bob, you're on with David Morata. Go right ahead.
Hi, Rob.
Hello.
Yes, I have I went to work right out of high school to the steel mill. I worked there for about 3 months, and I decided, why should I help make someone a millionaire when I can work just as hard and do it for myself? And I have been self-employed for over 50 years now. And, you know, there's been times when it was either feast or famine, but I just don't think I could work for anybody else. And I just don't think you can tell anyone nowadays, look, you can do it for yourself, and because if I could do it, anybody could do it.
David, I'm going to let you respond to that. And Bob, Happy New Year. It's good to hear from you. I recognize the voice.
Thanks.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, Bob is less than 5% of the country who's willing to work for themselves. It's, you know, if you're willing to work for yourself first, you're not liable to be a liberal.
Exactly right.
Not with all the government regulations that now fall on you. And second, you have the freedom to do kind of whatever you want. You also have the responsibility to do whatever you want, and your success or failure is going to fall right on your own shoulders. So less than 5% of the country are willing to take that leap and work for themselves. But those who do, generally, there's a lot of, first of all, there's a ton of financial planning with a small business owner that you can do, and you can tune your finances any way you want because you're a small business owner. But second, you're able to, you know, just have your own destiny. I will say there's a growing movement in the United States to have more gig economy. So all the Uber drivers really enjoyed the freedom to come to work or not come to work and sign up and, you know, do all that themselves. Mm-hmm. They enjoyed being self-employed. California said, no, because that makes you too conservative. We want you to be an employee because that's just better. And all the Uber drivers in California said, that's ridiculous. We don't want to be employees. We want to be our own people.
Mm-hmm.
I will say, you know, congratulations to Bob. It's not everyone who wants to do that because it's a ton of work, but it is a much better approach because now you can hire other people, you know, to work, and, you know, assuming you can get people to work these days.
Yeah, that's
another
challenge.
Unfortunately, this is the great resignation. We're in the midst of that. And I will say, just anecdotally, I have had a record number of clients in the last 3 years say, I'm done and I want to quit. On one hand, it's like, are you sure? And can't you find a better job that you enjoy doing? But they're just saying, no, I just want to quit.
Let's go back to the phones. We've got a couple more callers on the line. Let's say hello to Sheila. Sheila, thank you for holding on. You're on with David Morata.
Thank you. Hello, David. I took one of your classes years ago at Ollie and found it very, very helpful. I'm 80 years old, and I'm financially independent, but I'm wondering how to protect against these crazy rules they're making in Washington, and I'm really concerned about whether the president can change the paper that we use for money. Is he capable of doing that article that he wrote, 14037 or whatever, that executive order?
Let's get a response. And Sheila, great to hear from you. I'll let you take the call off the air. Go ahead, David.
Sheila, thanks for taking the Ollie course. I'm offering another Ollie course for those who are interested. It is the least expensive way to ask me tons of questions. So so I will say that's coming up, I think, in Ollie this May. So there's a, you know, there's a no, it's coming up in April. It's coming up in April. It goes 1 week into May.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't worry too much about the paper money, because the paper money is really a tax on people who are investing in money. And we don't recommend investing in money. The best allocation that you can have to money is maybe what you need for the next few years. So that's the correct allocation to money. And you can put enough in there to last the next few years. and that will be okay. But everything other than that really should be invested in something that is going to appreciate at a higher rate than inflation. If you want to invest in money, really that's like investing in Zimbabwe dollars. Currently, they're worth more than they were when they were a currency, simply because everyone wants to have a $100,000 Zimbabwe note as a novelty item. You know, and I own several of them, and they did. They cost more there than they did in when they were in currency. I don't think the U.S. dollar has a good long-term approach. It's never had a good long-term approach. If you look at the U.S. dollar over the last 200 years, it's gone from being worth a dollar to now being worth 7 cents of what it used to be worth. So, you know, that kind of investment is a terrible idea. Similarly, gold, cryptocurrency, there's a lot of other things you shouldn't be investing in. What you should be investing in is productivity. So something that's productive, that has an income stream associated with it, and that's publicly priced and traded. Those are my rules for how you should be investing.
Sheila, you had a follow-up. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I wondered about gold in particular. I've got a very small amount in gold bars and wonder, is gold a good investment these days? It's been fluctuating all over the place. And silver coins?
Yeah, gold and silver is not a good investment. If you look at gold over the last 40 years, it has not kept up with inflation. Really, it should keep up with inflation, but it should just keep up with inflation. And then even if it had kept up with inflation, it is taxed at a higher tax rate when it keeps up with inflation. So that's also not a good idea. So gold and silver, while they are comforting to many people, they really are way too volatile to put a retirement plan on it. And they don't keep up with inflation. We're looking for something that keeps up with inflation plus something. There should be some earnings on top of that. You know, so an investment is something that pays you money, and if you hold a bar of gold, it really doesn't pay you money. The same is true with cryptocurrency, which has been very popular recently, and then maybe not as popular more recently than that. Cryptocurrency also has no intrinsic value. It has no income stream. It really should, you know, the correct asset allocation to cryptocurrency is probably zero. And cryptocurrency also has no base value, so it's also not going to have a very good return.
Yeah, and I think, and Sheila, thank you so much for the call. I think a lot of people are not aware that you get taxed on profits that you make if you hold gold and it goes up in value, and that's something very important to consider.
I think the collectibles tax, capital gains tax, is at 28%.
Ouch.
I think that's correct, whereas most capital gains tax is only at 15.
Yeah. Let's go back to the phones. I don't have a lot of time, but Tom's been very patient. Go ahead, please.
Sure. David was talking about the requirements that the government puts on his business. And I was reading that UVA's Department of Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion has a budget of they spend $7 million a year on those activities. And I wondered, as a private business, does David have to report that, those sort of things?
Okay. Good question.
I'm going to be very careful in how I answer. There are some requirements that the government puts on me, such as I have every three years there's a business census coming from the Census Department. But the Census Department has never won. They've never even tried to prosecute a case against someone. So I take that, and you know, the first thing I do is I take that and I call the Census Department. And they say, no, you have to fill all that out online. And I say, I don't understand your questions. And they say, well, it's not worth our time to help answer your questions. And I say, well, if it's not worth your time, it's not worth my time either. And that ends up going in the trash can. So you need to know, what are the penalties for not filling out all the government forms? Mm-hmm. Some of the penalties are pretty serious, and some of the penalties are not serious at all. And so I only fill out the serious ones, the ones that have some bite to them, which is probably why they have the bite in the first place. Probably why they put the penalties on here, because I can't imagine anyone rationally deciding that it would be a good idea to fill out all those government forms. Regarding the diversity and inclusion, you know, one way to solve that problem is just for all the white males to put down prefer not to answer. Mm. And then we'd only have blacks and females and minorities employed. And then that would solve our problem.
I like your way of thinking. All right, Tom, thank you very much for the call. I hear you, and actually we'll be talking about that on the program next week. We've got about a minute to wrap it up, so I'm going to let you take it from here, David. Go ahead.
Yeah, so the correct answer for how long you should plan on living is you should plan on making it to your 101st birthday. That is really the safe answer, because especially if you are married to someone, we like to do planning for the younger to live to their 101st birthday. It is essential because, unlike what you're used to thinking about of living on average to average life expectancy, there is a wide variation on average life expectancy. So, for example, my mother passed away when she was 75. Now, she did smoke, so that was she died of lung cancer. Mm-hmm. So that is a contributing factor. My father's still alive at 95, 96 now. He's had his birthday. So that's another, aspect. One of you could live well into your 90s. In fact, the odds of a couple living into their 90s, this is just from the Social Security tables, the odds of one member of a couple living into their 90s is probably at 50%. So that's a lot. And you wouldn't want to have a plan that has a 50% chance of failure. So you should count on living to 97 or 98 is the correct answer, because that will give you a 10% chance. We like to go to 101 because that gives you a 5% chance of one member living to 101. We had our oldest client die recently. She was just 60 days short of her 104th birthday, and that's a lot. But we were very glad that she had enough money. We were going to have a conversation where she was going to run out of money in about 6 months. And fortunately, we didn't have to have that conversation, or unfortunately, because she passed away.
David Morata is online at moradaonmoney.com. A great conversation. We left a lot on the table. To be continued. David, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.